We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now. And support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Thanks for joining me for another Blunt Business on CannabisRadio.com, powered by the Buzz CRM. After all the frustration, listen, you got all these logins and all these different things you have to go through to help work on your marketing, your lead generation, etc. The endless cycles for hoping for a system that actually works. You're ready for something steady, something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we have the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM, built with you in mind, more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Seize your worth. A CRM that sees your worth finally, streamlines your workflows, gives you tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. You have outdated platforms. Things change all the time. You want something that's a software as a service that actually works for you and takes care of everything and is very easy to integrate into everything that you're doing. That's why the Buzz CRM is not just a redesign, it's a revolution. You want to really go and take care of what your business is right now? Let the Buzz CRM do everything for you. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today, thebuzzcrm.com. Sign up now, very low barrier to entry. You need to do it today. With me here on the program is a leader, innovator, and proven brand builder in the cannabis industry with more than a decade and a half of experience in marketing, management, operations, compliance, and investor relations. And I'm happy to go and welcome on board the CEO of Golden Hour Collective, David Spradlin. David, thanks for being on with us.
Hey, thank you very much. I really appreciate being on.
So there's a lot you're working on. I know you've been pretty busy with your own aspects, and also not too long ago, actually starting your own podcast, the Golden Hour podcast. And I want to just take a couple of things you've mentioned of your own story there on the podcast. Talking about a transformative moment when you saw a cancer patient in a poorly run dispensary, inspiring you to create a better model. And then you see the corporatization, the cannabis industry, we talk about all the time, the MSOs, and the focus on adult use. But you want to go and make it where you had an original mission of patient care and access to medicine that's not lost, especially for those with limited resources or serious medical conditions that may be priced out by premium products or taxed heavily. So what is your take about that aspect and the risk that the industry you've helped to build is looking to go more adult use, obviously more money behind it, more customers, and they're kind of leaving the medical part behind?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's I appreciate the introduction. That's a lot to encapsulate very poignantly. Yeah, but it goes back to the beginning. You know, I started off on the grow side in 2006, 2007, bringing market to product for medical patients. And at the time, you know, the dispensary landscape in California was, you know, hit and miss. You know, many of these, you know, dispensaries at the time were not the safest environments to be in, especially if you're a medical patient. You know, feeling under the weather, you know, not at your best point in life to go into a place that created more anxiety for you was probably not the, you know, most comforting experience. So that's why I got into the retail side, was just to create a more comforting, medically focused experience for medical patients. And that's how we started. You know, we did a lot of the beta testing early on with a lot of the lab testing and kind of expanded from there, you know, and then had a lot of good years in the medical market. When 2018 rolled around in California and adult use is on the horizon, you know, we kind of had some anxiety about what that was going to look like a lot of people, and you know, kind of made a decision to try to scale up what we had created. And, you know, like many people in the early days of raising capital in cannabis, you know, on both sides, the investor side and the operator side, it was an awkward experiment, to say the least. You know, and so not a lot of us knew what we were getting into raising capital or deploying capital in the space. So proud of what we built prior, but, you know, after a few years of that, took a step back and really did some soul searching about whether I wanted to proceed in this space. You know, I've done business all over the country and a variety of states. You know, there's no place like home in California.
Right. We're going to talk about more about that because there's been so much you've done coast to coast already. But sure. Starting off, going back to the early days where the evolution of the market, of the industry, you know, over 10 years ago, being a very green market. It's now more regulated, more still complex.
Yeah.
A lot of things are still not, the framework is not perfect. And also, it's so various from state to state, from everything you've gone through. But you've seen challenges yourself as a proprietor, an owner, law enforcement scrutiny, federal raids. And, you know, it's something that, you know, a lot of the current and aspiring cannabis entrepreneurs didn't have to go through, but you did. And, you know, you navigated tension between advocating for policy changes and trying to survive in a highly competitive and often unpredictable market. So going through this, we were not an MSO. You're coming in as a grassroots operator and also working as a legacy operator and looking out for other legacy operators in the space. You know, what is it that you are able to going to do to avoid being crushed by the weight of compliance and competition that keeps you in the mix in the competition?
Right. Well, I don't think anybody's not being crushed by the weight of compliance in California, whether you're MSO or not. I mean, that's why you've seen a big retreat by a lot of the large MSOs out of the state, because it is very challenging in California and always has been. You know, it's always been at the tip of the spear, whether it was in the early days, you know, on the advocacy side, whether it was the medical market, trying to create what we're creating still to this day. California is a knife fight, and it always has been, which is one of the reasons why when I took a step back and kind of thought through the best path forward, retrenching into the roots of the industry, of the community, of the culture was where we landed. And I think that that's the right place to be. You know, I talk a lot about, you know, the foundations of this business, and the foundations of this business are in the hills of Northern California. You know what I mean? It goes back to the 60s. It goes back to the 70s, where people just kind of went back to the land, wanted to create their own experience, you know, away from the hustle and bustle and the politics. And that's how you got the Emerald Triangle. And that's where you have these growers that are still to this day, 50 years later, still creating some of the best cannabis, some of the best strains, some of the best extracts in the world, you know? So why wouldn't we lean into that and what we know and where we come from? Especially given, to your point, the weight of compliance and the market, you know, ups and downs, the things that made the Emerald Triangle strong are now their biggest impediments. You know, they're up north. It's hard to get to. These farms are isolated. The operators are isolated. They're not tapped into the industry necessarily. And, you know, those strengths are still there. They just need a conduit. And that's what Golden Hour is, a conduit to the farmers, to the broader market in California, to bring these incredible products, these incredible strains, this incredible decades and generations of wealth of know-how to, you know, somewhat watered down market, to be honest with you, you know?
Yeah. Now, as I mentioned before, you've done a lot in terms of your own work into navigating complex regulations, all your experience going on through that. And the regulations that impact small businesses and legacy farmers in California. So part of it is, you know, there's the need for what could be policy changes that would help in California to make it that the industry can be more equitable and sustainable for all stakeholders, not just corporate. And then you're looking at the often strained relationship where there is, where the regulatory landscape actually favors larger corporations, and that smaller farms like yours could be squeezed out. Tell me through the dynamic there that you've taken from California and how much the regulations have really played a role in favoritism or just making it an uneven playing field.
Well, that's a big bite to take. I think it starts off with, you know, just the nature of California. I mean, you really have five, maybe six states in one here with the associated politics, right? So while California was the first to go medical, you know, maybe with the exception of Alaska, but first to go medical in a big formalized program, we were late in the game of going adult use because of the politics of the state, right? So what you had from a regulatory standpoint is kind of these Faustian bargains created with different stakeholders, you know, and now we have what we have, which is not really working for anyone. You know, I think the biggest issue for everyone across the board, no matter if you're big or small, is the taxation, both at the state level, but also at the local level. You know, you have markets like LA where the local tax is 10%. You can't survive in this environment at 10%. You know what I mean? It's impossible. You're robbing Peter to pay Paul and existing that way. But, you know, you get to scale, it makes it a little easier, but I don't know anybody that's happy with the state of affairs down there. I don't know anybody that's thriving with the state of affairs down there. And then you have, you know, across the board, you have zero local tax. You have 10, 15% local tax. It's crazy. Plus, you know, you got the state excise tax, which is already crippling, going up in June. I think by design, they're trying to force consolidation to where the state has an easier job regulating a small handful of large operators and wiping out, you know, the small mom and pop, which is completely contrary to what we were sold as voters, where there was going to be placeholders and support systems in place for the legacy operators. And they've just been sold up the river at every level.
Stay tuned. We have more Blunt Business coming up after a short break.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Welcome back to Blunt Business. Here, the CEO of Golden Hour Collective, David Spradlin. I'm here in South Florida, and in Florida itself, when you look at the size and scope of what Florida could be, it could be very competitive in a revenue sense to California if things were allowed to be where they are because of the kind of demographic we have here. But there's been the push in the last 8 years of trying to get adult use onto the ballot and then try to get it passed. Got close in 2024, but still a couple of percentage shy of the supermajority necessary to get to adult use. But I think also part of it is that you've had the petitions going on where the MSOs, much like in California, the MSOs were able to go ahead and lead the charge in the campaign to have cannabis be legalized, but they wanted it under their own regulations. And they kind of pushed out the grassroots, pushed out legacy operators, social equity, all that kind of been pushed to the wayside. And let everything go in. But in the meantime, medical has still thrived pretty well. And because of the MSOs, I don't know, you know, what I would have put it almost like the tenacity to be grabbing more of the revenue that they can, obviously, but they wanted to leave everybody out. That's why medical is still going to be what it is in Florida. Do you think some kind of scenario like that would have been worked best in California? Because in California's, in retrospect, did they do a good job of incorporating, you know, corporate social responsibility, of bringing in legacy operators? Do you think there is enough seats at the table for companies like yours to be able to go and speak in California, and if Florida could learn something from that?
Yeah, I mean, I think California did try its best. I think they were trying to my earlier point, appease a wide and very
very body of inputs. But you know, as things have rolled out, they've you know, pulled back a lot of those commitments and a lot of those, you know, regulations that were supportive of smaller mom and pop, you know, legacy folks. I can't speak a ton to Florida and how they've evolved just because I'm not super familiar with it. I do know that, you know, the market seems to be favorable to larger operators. I don't know a whole lot of small mom and pops in Florida. Seems to be anchored to the large, you know, MSOs, many of them based out of Florida. You know, you got your Trulieves that, you know, grew to a large success in Florida.
And basically really managed the campaign to try to get cannabis passed and on the right ballot. And also we got the petitions out there. That was them. So I'll give the credit to them. But like I said, it's part of the fact that, you know, when there was another petition out there, they were able to out-petition that other petition. Right. And then leave it where they can have control of it because they wanted to basically make it where it's big box all the way across in Florida.
Yeah.
And that's what they tried to do. But it's like, you know, it's like they wanted to go and do what California did do, but like even to a more of an extent. It's kind of like that. Because even some of the California MSOs have made their way over to Florida to try to do that same thing.
100%. Yeah. And I think the difference is, you know, because like I said, I can't speak to Florida. I know I have some good friends that live in Florida. They definitely have an opinion. But maybe that model works for Florida. It seems to be working for Florida. I don't talk to a whole lot of medical patients in Florida that have a big issue with the program there. I know some folks that definitely wish that there was, you know, a bigger market where that's where adult use and recreational use comes in. I think the biggest difference between California and Florida is the depths and longevity of the traditional / legacy market, where you don't have that same depth and legacy. You don't have an Emerald Triangle in Florida. You know what I mean? Not to say that there's not some great growers that have been doing great work there for many, many years, but by comparison, it's just a different animal altogether. California really did lead the way in the medical cannabis concept as a whole. Cannabis as medicine grew out of the AIDS crisis in San Francisco. These things are just rooted in our cannabis culture so deeply, not to mention what I brought up before about, you know, during the 60s, you know, kind of the return to land movement and, you know, people going up and living in communes up north is kind of where the origins of the Emerald Triangle also came into play. So these operators that have done the work, put their life, their family, everything on the line to produce this great medicine and provide it to medical patients for decades and decades in California are the ones being left behind now. So it's a little bit different of a story and a concept and a problem than you have in places like Florida, where it's a comparable market size-wise, arguably a better market in many ways, because they don't have this legacy problem, right? And our point at Golden Hour and why we're retrenching into anchoring to these legacy small mom and pop providers is because that's such a big part of the California cannabis story and such a big part of the cannabis brand in California that if it were to go away, which it is going away, if you do a drive through the Emerald Triangle right now versus 5 years ago, it's shocking the level of I don't know what the right word for it is. I compare it to, you know, Detroit in the 90s, man. There's empty farms. There's falling down hoop houses. Everyone you talk to is in some level of despair, stress, anxiety. Whereas 5-10 years ago, everybody's rocking and rolling. There was a self-created economy. There was a self-created regulatory system. Everybody had checks and balances. Everybody was making money. Not nobody was getting rich, but it was self-sustaining the way it had been for decades before. Everybody was very excited about legalization. We're finally going to get a chance to not have these helicopters swooping on us and tearing down our gardens and, you know, terrorizing our kids. And then everybody really did try to buy into that system and realize there was no there. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, and that's a complicated conversation that we could do a whole podcast on.
Oh, I bet that. But I want to get something else real quick. In terms of the area of social, really social equity and legacy operators.
Yeah.
Now, in that area, okay, I've heard of the podcasters out there, and even the ones that are here on the network, you know, the ones about social equity. It's the part where when I want to hear that conversation, I want to hear the words legacy operators come out of their mouth.
Yeah.
100%. I want that constantly. And it's 100%. And that's also when it comes to the licensing area, because I'm in the CERD program in New York, or in Illinois, and some of the areas where they had the lottery system, or they have, you know, just such a overwhelming barrier to entry for some of those legacy operators to get in, even if they have a program that will allow them to get the chance to go ahead and legitimize themselves. It's not been well thought out or fleshed out. Okay.
No.
And we still have an issue where in these markets, you have legacy, sellers. The problem is the black market, it might be selling California and Colorado based cannabis products, but they're smuggling it over state lines to say Florida. Cause I've seen it here in Florida where sure can go ahead and buy because they want the quality of the California cannabis products in California, Colorado, but they'll go and bring it over here as opposed to just going after getting medical marijuana card.
Yep.
There's that part where I want those that are in legacy right now that are still black market. I want the barrier to entry to go ahead and have them be able to be legitimized. There should be a path to legalization for them to get them in there, not just as an employee, but also to be able to have ownership.
Yeah.
And that's the part I don't think that anyone has really gotten to yet. I know there are organizations out there, obviously, talk about the Justice or Last Prisoner Project and others that have gone in. But it's putting that all together, because I honestly think social equity will work best. Everybody can talk about those that have been, you know, expunging records, past cannabis convictions. But what are the ones that when they first got here, they were servicing the public with cannabis?
Yeah.
The ones that actually, and you were able to flesh out and filter out the ones that have done it right.
Yeah.
And bring them forward. Is there anyone right now that you feel like, is that something in California that has been, that you could say has been put more to the forefront in the conversations you've had? Do you think there is a framework right there that is starting to be fleshed out that could be the gold standard for all these other states?
I wish I could say yes, but absolutely not. You know, I think the city of Oakland has done a really good job in prioritizing equity with respect to those overwhelmingly affected by the war on drugs. But when it comes to true legacy operators, people that have been growing cannabis for decades, people that have been bringing cannabis to market, you know, to medical patients, those people in the equity conversation have been largely left behind. It's almost become a completely separate issue with legacy operators, quote unquote, versus equity operators. And if you look at it through that framework, you have to figure out for both, because both have to be taken into consideration, you know? But to your point, legacy operators, the people that have done the work, the people that I consider the bedrock of this industry, have been largely left out in the cold. There's not a prioritization for small mom and pops. You know, Gavin Newsom, our governor, you know, that's a whole other conversation as well, just killed a bill that would have allowed small mom and pop farmers to do direct sales in state sanctioned farmers markets. Like, why would that be banned? You know what I mean? You have boxes of weed going out of these indoor grows, getting shipped over to Florida, to your example. The metric system is an absolute failure. The DCC here in California is suspect, to say the least. There's hardly any regulatory, you know, enforcement on a lot of black market stuff going on. And then you have these growers in the hills that tried like hell to follow the rules, get their permits, get their properties, you know, engineered and all the, you know, all the CEQA stuff, and then to hit a wall and to get nailed with fines and to get, you know, $100,000 permit fees. It's just, where do you go from there when the market is what the market is? We got pounds of sun-grown going for $150 a pound right now in Northern California. You know what I mean? Like, how do you make ends meet like that when it costs you, just for your licensing, $40,000-$50,000 a season? You just can't do it. You know, it doesn't make any sense. And that's systematic. That's by design. And that's where, you know, the rubber hits the road on getting some of these rules changed, because without systematic change, there's just not going to be a material impact to these farmers, you know. And that's why we're doing what we're doing at Golden Hour, with being laser focused on prioritizing, you know, our sourcing from these people, by giving their, uplifting their brands, by getting them into the supply chain in a way that most retailers don't have the intent to do. But with that, that's a small drop in the bucket versus what needs to happen from a regulatory standpoint.
Stay tuned. We have more Blunt Business coming up after a short break. Welcome back to Blunt Business. We're with the CEO of Golden Hour Collective, David Spradlin. And I'll tell you, there's a thing that I am so worried about in California, because I'm wondering what's going to happen to the industry there, because right now the legislature is looking at a possible 25% tax increase in July.
Yep.
So they're looking at a new excise rate for cannabis that they're trying to determine between 15 and 19% increase.
Yep.
The Department of Cannabis Control has a $23 million budget deficit this year.
Yep.
Like, I don't know what's going on over there, but it's like that kind of disorganization and how the market's been handled. There's one thing where there were so many taxes upon so many taxes that are being loomed over for any business coming in. But that right there, I haven't heard a lot talked about it in larger circles in the cannabis industry. Are we just waiting to July, just waiting for the ball, for the hammer to drop? Because that's a big deal here. How big of an impact would that make for an outfit like yours if that comes into play?
Oh, it'll be crushing for everybody. You know, they switched a few years back. They switched the excise tax to be the burden of the retailer because I think it was easier to collect from that. It used to be at the distribution point. But because of net terms and everything else, they decided to switch it to retail because retail is the only vertical that gets paid immediately at the transaction point. So they know the money's in the building. This increase, I believe, was largely because of the moratorium they put on the cultivation tax, because you had growers lobbying so heavily that the cultivation tax is overly burdensome. So they put a moratorium on it, but then a few months later just flipped it to increasing the excise tax at the point of sale at the retail level, right? So last report I saw, I want to say it was California operators were like $1.3 billion delinquent in tax payments right now, and they're going to go ahead and increase the excise tax. You can't look at what's happening and not think that the intent is to create an extinction event of small mom and pop operators and hand the keys over to the larger operators that are easy to manage. Why would the state want to sit there and police hundreds of operators when they can have a dozen or so well-financed operators and hand the keys over to them? You know,
Right. And that's you're exactly right. $1.3 billion in tax revenue, excise taxes are already collected.
Yep.
And then there's a part where it was only done because of the fact that the tax revenue did not meet a certain amount. Like, well, whose fault is that? Like, you're taxing so much, you're making products so much higher. Again, you just said sun grown. I forget what price you said. You said $120 to $150.
About $150 a pound. You know?
Jesus, man. I mean, you can't. Yeah. I mean, there's no way to go ahead and kind of sustain that right there. So then there's the latest budget proposal from the governor's office that has a tax increase. And like, well, you know, they'll know if it's going to be up to 19% or more than that. But do you feel like, is that going to take some businesses out? Is that enough to take them out?
People are on a razor's edge right now, you know. I don't know what's going to happen. Every conversation I have is really like a shoulder shrug at this point from operators. They're like, well, there doesn't seem to be a huge lobby against this increase. The state doesn't seem to be listening. Even if there was, they are going to do what they're going to do, and we're going to do what we're going to do. It's kind of the mentality out here. Everybody's so bewildered. Everybody's so stressed that we're just, you know, trying to keep the hands up and keep swinging and see what happens. But at the end of the day, if there's no money to be paid to the tax coffers, there's no money to be paid to the tax coffers, you know?
Yeah.
Thankfully, you know, one of the reasons our model works so well is, you know, it really is a partnership with these small farmers. So, you know, the financing is very cyclical within our organization. So we're able to, you know, keep make ends meet that way, where it's not so, you know, credit heavy. But, you know, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough for everybody. I don't care if you have 50 stores in the state or you have one little dinky boutique store in the state, it's going to be tough, you know?
But one thing is, you persevered all throughout this time. You know, you do a lot of work in terms for Golden Hour, in terms of employees getting fair wages, benefits for employees.
Yeah.
That looming unionization kind of front has not reared its ugly head yet too much in the area. Also, one thing I want to commend is that you have developed a state authorized apprenticeship program where you're creating pathways for long-term stable careers in the industry, then rather providing a pool of low wage labor. Obviously, we know that's being changed right now with some of the things going on with the undocumented immigrants right now. Mm-hmm. And California will be definitely one of those ground zero places for that. So now you know that you're going to have whatever employees you're going to have on board that'll be working in cannabis. You want to continue to kind of hold off and create fair wages, fair benefits for all those employees. When you see that right there, what is it about what you feel like that when you're doing a golden hour that is such a great role model and trend setting for other businesses to follow, which is why you're able to go and sustain and thrive in this market and still be competitive?
Right. I mean, yeah, again, that's a big bite to take, but sure. You know, coming from the early stages, you know, we never wanted to see this turn into a cheap commodity business. You know, that's a little bit of a losing battle at a certain point, but you know, you can only control what's within your four walls. And we always wanted to have well-compensated employees, because well-compensated employees work harder and they care more. And that transitions to the customer, that transitions to the patient. If you got somebody making, you know, minimum wage and, you know, they're struggling at home and they can't pay their bills, that internal struggle that they come into the office with is going to translate to the care that they give the patients in front of them, right? Which is going to create a worse experience, which is going to create less sticky customers, right? If you come in, I've always said we're much more on the hospitality business than we are on the retail business, because you can buy weed anywhere in California. You can definitely buy it cheaper than what you can buy in a legal dispensary because of the tax burden, because of all the, you know, operational costs. You can get it on the street anywhere. So why do people come to the dispensary? They come because they want safe product, they want good product, and they really want care. They want someone that can guide them through the process. They want someone that can give them opportunities to try new products that they feel comfortable trying and feel safe trying because they've been educated on the product. You can't get that level of service from an employee that's feeling overworked, underpaid, and all the problems that come with not making enough money and not being able to pay your rent, not being able to make your car payment, not be able to fix your flat tire when it comes. So really the employees are the foundation of the business. You know what I mean? I've always felt like that. That's maybe a little bit California centric, but that's just how I've always felt. And it's always translated. And I think the success that I've had in this space over, you know, going on two decades, you know, is proof enough that approach works.
You've done great work. So you've been able to go and do quite a bit of work for yourself again. And
appreciate that.
Management, marketing, operations, compliance, investor relations, opening up several different dispensaries when it came to Oakland or Sacramento, yep. 13 Perfect Union locations in California. You were CEO there for a while. We actually featured them over on our Green Peak program a while back.
Oh, right.
And Megan Fort, we talked to was who.
Beautiful. Yeah. Shout out to Perfect Union, man. That place will always be near and dear to my heart. I spent almost 15 years there, started from, you know, nothing pre-revenue, got it up to where they are today. A fantastic operation. You know, Tom and Mikey running that place do a great, great job. They really turned the place around and, you know, back on growth. You know, I think the whole industry in California hit a little skid post-COVID, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, being able to pivot out of that and back into growth mode is an amazing thing. And they just opened a store in Woodland that's doing great. They got a couple more in the pipeline. So shout out the Perfect Union folks. I love those guys.
Let's now talk about Golden Hour Collective, family owned cannabis dispensary in Weed, California, just underneath the majestic Mount Shasta. Remember, there's companies out there that will go ahead and take the melted water to help irrigate, to help create such a great, wonderful of that Northern California. So well-respected cannabis we all learn and love about. So flowers, pre-rolls, edibles, so much more. Let's go to the website right now, goldenhourcollective.org, goldenhourcollective.org. And for those that are going to the website, real quickly, let them know what they should go and take a look at. And when they go and shop, what can they be looking for?
Yeah, man. Like you said, you know, we're blessed to be at the base of Mount Shasta. There's some amazing farms right in our neck of the woods. Backcountry Organics out of Dunsmuir, nothing but, you know, their own blend of soil and compost teas with Shasta fed water. Shasta Flower and Hash Company out of Redding, same thing. Amazing top shelf indoor products coming out of that grow in Redding. We are very, very blessed to be in the far north of the state, surrounded by some of the best growers. Let's hop and a skip over to the Emerald Triangle, Lost Creek, great sun-grown product out of Honeydew, California, over in Southern Humboldt. You know, just we're surrounded by some of the best growers and some of the best farms, and that's by design. When, you know, I was from the Bay Area, I raised my family in Sacramento. You know, founded Perfect Union in Sacramento. Sacramento was good to me, but when I really, you know, took a step back and wanted to kind of start something new and create something different, I had to be in the far north. You know what I mean? Because that's where
that's the belly of the beast for cannabis, right? And I wanted to be around these farmers. I wanted to be on their land, you know, making it happen. And that's the soul of Gold Matter Collective, is really just, you know, being with the farmers, bringing that product to market, understanding where it came from, so that we can then tell our customers exactly what this product is, where it came from, how it was grown, the farmers that grew it. And I think across the board, whether you're looking at cannabis or whether you're looking in CPG or whether you're looking at any consumer, you know, industry, it's, you know, people want to buy stuff that they can feel good about. You know, I think the cheap throwaway mentality fits in some areas, but at the end of the day, if you're going to spend $50 on an eighth, $10 on an eighth, whatever you're going to spend on your eighth, you want to know that it's supporting, you know, people in your community, it's coming from a good source, it's safe, you know. And you know, that's what we're trying to accomplish with Golden Hour Collective.
Fantastic. And again, goldenhourcollective.org is the website. Make sure to go and go take a look at that. goldenhourcollective.org. Great products there. And also, I got to ask you, is there anything, because we are recording this just before Valentine's Day, and of course, about, what, 6 to 8 weeks before we get to 420, any preliminary plans you already have for 420 that you can kind of divulge to us at this point?
Oh, man, we're definitely going to have a big party like always. You know, 420 is a great celebration, but for retailers, it's just a lot of work. So we're going to have a big party. You're going to have a lot of great farmers on site, you know, providing great products. We're going to have some games, some giveaways, the whole bit, you know, what we could expect from a far Northern California 420 special. Definitely going to have some great stuff going on Valentine's Day, you know. So just keep an eye on the website, keep an eye on the Instagram at goldenhour_weed. And you know, we'll be communicating that way.
Well, all the best to you, all you folks over there in California. And David, really appreciate you kind of again joining us here on Grassroots Marketing. David Spradlin, CEO and founder at Golden Hour Collective. Thanks for being all with us. Really appreciate you taking time out, and you know, best of luck out there. And let's just hope everything continues to thrive and survive, and let's hope for the best in California.
Oh yeah, man. We're going to be giving them heck till the end. So we'll stay in touch. All right. I appreciate it, Brasco.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time. We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.
Running an online business requires passion, knowledge, and a lot of dedication. Adding the complexities of setting up and managing hosting for your website piles on more work when you already have so many plates spinning. Whether you manage one WordPress website or dozens, Kinsta's managed solutions give you access to a platform that's optimized for the fastest speed, has enterprise-grade security features, and is powered by an intuitive custom dashboard with everything you need to manage your sites efficiently. Plus, Kinsta provides human-only WordPress expert support, which is available 24/7, 365, to assist with even the most complex sites. Forget frustrating AI chatbots. Kinsta gives you complete peace of mind by ensuring that your WordPress sites are always online, secure, and performing at their best. Start your journey with Kinsta today and get your first month free. Don't have time to migrate your site? Kinsta takes care of everything for you. Learn more at kinsta.com/podcast. That's KINSTA.com/podcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.